Geiststurm by M.K. Gibson. Performed by Kyle Tate. October 1965, Western Maryland, Reich-sanctioned hunting region. 1. Kneeling by the base of an old oak tree, Jonathan drew the bow until the string touched his cheek. The deer, a mother doe and two young ones, walked the trail. The mother would bring more meat, but the young ones would be easier to kill. The deer were over 40 yards away and slightly downhill of him. No. Slowly and silently, he eased the tension off the weapon. Too difficult. With only 5 arrows left, he couldn't afford to take an iffy shot. A bent or broken arrow was one less chance to eat again. Jonathan breathed out in frustration. He had to be patient. He needed an instant kill. Tracking a wounded animal took time. Time neither he or his mother had. He gave a quick glance upward at the brewing storm. Jonathan could feel the building pressure, the malevolence. He had to make a decision. Go for the kill, or get home to turn on the collectors. Don't be rash. Think. The small family continued down the trail. Their ears twitched, probing for predators. Based on the terrain and the game trail they were using, Jonathan guessed the deer were most likely moving towards the small nearby stream about a mile away. If he could get there ahead of them, then he would have a chance. Satisfied with the plan, Jonathan waited several minutes before moving back up the hill. If he cut through the field and over the mountainside, he could get ahead of them and work his way up the creek bed. The foliage and natural cover could be used as a hunter's blind. Breaching the forest line, amber waves of knee-high wild grass rippled in the cool breeze. High above, standing like silent guardians, the massive metal structures greeted Jonathan as they always did, with awe and curiosity. The towering, identical T-shaped monuments were spaced half a mile apart, spanning the length of the clearing and over the horizon line. Long black cables hung from the derelict towers. The bare gray steel girders always looked incomplete to Jonathan. His grandfather told them they used to conduct old-fashioned electricity, but that was long ago, before he was born. Back before the bombs were dropped. Back when America and the Allies had lost the war. Jonathan shook his head. The old war wasn't his concern. Eating was. And he had to cover a lot of distance in a short amount of time. Low, powerful thunder rumbled in the distance. The purple-black cloudhead was beginning to form. Rolling and churning. Hating. Hunting. He heard the whisper. Jonathan. No. He refused to acknowledge it. It was the wind and his hunger. Nothing more. It wasn't the voices. Please. God. Not now. Quickly, he unslung his backpack, dropping the heavy mass of canvas to the ground. Going by muscle memory more than conscious thought, his hands began assembling his spanner. Removing the leg fittings first and setting them aside, Jonathan pulled out the leather harness, unrolling the tangled mess of buckles, leather, braided power cords, and steel. Jonathan. The skin on the back of his neck prickled as he closed his eyes. Icy fear crackled down his spine and settled in his stomach. The voices. They always called to him. Always. His mother said the voices were a good thing. A warning. Jonathan forced his hands to finish assembling his spanner. Setting the leg fitting up, side by side, Jonathan strapped the harness around his legs, shoulders, and waist, and then slung the backpack with the power supply around his worn leather coat and buckled it tight. Pulling the braided power cord from the pack's lower retractable housing, he attached it to the regulator on his belt. He stepped into the leg fittings, locking his feet in place. The shocks and struts squeaked slightly. Mentally, he cursed himself for not oiling them earlier. He unwound the power cables from the legs and inserted them into the regulator. Looking down at the rectangular display on his belt buckle, the first diode flashed a constant amber, showing he had an initial charge. His hand moved towards the bottom of his backpack, but his hand hesitated on the ignition switch. Were the deer worth it? It was a huge risk. There would be other deer. Maybe he could forage for mushrooms and tubers again? The recent mid-fall cold snap had killed most of the berries in the area. What were left had been eaten by the local wildlife. He could go another day, maybe two, without eating. But Mom couldn't. Damn it, she just couldn't. She'd eaten the last few crumbs of bread 2 days ago. The wind blew by, and he smelled the unmistakable scent of dead things on the air. He thumbed the safety lock open and pressed the ignition. Geist hummed, powering the spanner. The leg fittings rattled for a moment as the magna inverters under his feet hummed with a slight warble of power. Slowly, he levitated a few inches off the ground. Jonathan turned the dial on the flow regulator on the pack's left shoulder strap. He rose higher. Once Jonathan was 12 to 14 inches from the ground, he pushed off with his right leg, then planted his left leg down hard. The spanner propelled him forward in bounding, gravity-defying leaps through the field. With controlled movements and a swing of his arms to counterbalance his motion, Jonathan covered large swaths of open ground in only moments. His dad had told him that Geist made the impossible possible. His grandfather had said the cost wasn't worth it. All Jonathan knew was that harvesting Geist paid for things. But the recent lack of storms meant no pay. And without pay, there was no food. The Reich had no charity programs. Not for an independent farm, anyway. If you starved, it was your fault for inefficient planning. Upon your death, your farm would be given to a family who would plan better. Reaching the tree line, he dialed the flow regulator down to a lower setting and slalomed down the steep, forested mountain in wide, lazy arcs. Jonathan grabbed the occasional small tree to alter his course so he could leap a log or kick off a large rock. But for just a moment, he was a little kid again. When hunger and responsibility didn't plague him. When laughter wasn't a luxury. In that moment, he was just 15, playing in the woods. Like he used to before his sister had been. Jonathan! The voice was so close, he thought he felt breath on his ear. Instinctively, he whipped his head to the side, looking for the source. Jonathan's right shin connected with a thick sapling. The impact spun him around. His left heel caught the ground and he tumbled out of control. His arms flailed uselessly, looking for purchase.
No.
Jonathan twisted hard, landing flat on his chest, with his right arm pinned under his body. The sudden impact knocked the wind out of him, and fiery pain blossomed from his wrist.
Ow,
he whispered through gritted teeth. He tried moving his fingers. They responded, but slowly. Nothing was broken, but he felt the heated, pulsing pain. Already his wrist was getting puffy. Not broken, but badly sprained. Pushing himself up with his left hand, Jonathan scanned the forest in every direction, looking and listening. He heard only the ambient sounds of the woods. He saw nothing. Standing, he checked the power regulator. It showed the amber light. He breathed a small relief, thankful that he had installed the gyroscopic kill switch. He checked the quiver on his hip, still counting 5 arrows, locked into place. Next, he pulled his bow off his back's maglock, inspecting it for damage. Seeing none, he held the weapon in his left hand and tried drawing it with his sprain. His arm began to tremble. He released the tension. He would need to be even closer to make a clean shot.
Hungry. So hungry.
He shut his eyes, blocking out the voice. The fear led to frustration. He was so tired. So tired of being afraid. So tired of being hungry. So... No, he said. Whether to himself or to the voice, the statement stood. No, you don't have time to be a child. You have a job to do. Do it. After his father had conscripted into the Reich, Jonathan was the man of the house. He had responsibilities. Like keeping your sister alive? He thought. No, the sickness took her. It wasn't his fault. He had to be a man. His mother needed him. His farm needed him. Jonathan powered on the spanner, returned the bow to the maglock, and continued down the mountainside towards the creek bed. 2. Creeping forward, Jonathan shifted his weight. His wrist throbbed, but he forced his mind to push the pain away. Nestled into the patch of overgrowth, he hoped that the damp, decomposing earthen forest would mask his scent. He had stowed the spanners and his pack under a log and covered it with leaves. He considered leaving the pack on, but the pack's buckles made too much noise. Jonathan checked where the game trail crossed the small creek. Seeing no fresh signs, he guessed that he'd made it ahead of the mother deer and her fawns. Any prey animal would move slowly and cautiously, especially a mother with her children. All he could do was to stay low, cover his scent, and wait. It was midday, no matter what the dark clouds above said. If he managed to make the kill, then he had a chance to get home before dark. He could almost smell the cooking venison and taste the juices. His stomach rumbled in anticipation. Not yet. The kill hasn't been made yet. Keep your head about you. With no cold compress for his sprain, Jonathan lay on his side in the makeshift camouflage, covering his wrist with wet, cold earth. It would help the swelling a little, but he didn't want his wrist numb either. Every few minutes or so, he removed the improvised compress and ran his fingers through a series of quick exercises. Was this everyone's life? He wondered. Waiting for food? Waiting to live? Waiting to die? Waiting to run? A small splash in the creek, followed by small rocks being overturned, brought him back to the moment. Slowly, as not to make any sudden movements, Jonathan saw the trio of deer approaching. Patience. Silently, Jonathan picked up the bow and prepared to draw. The deer walked cautiously, sampling the air, sniffing for danger. The babbling stream masked some sound as Jonathan slowly rose to his knee. He raised his weapon, trying to line the bow alongside a tree profile, mimicking the land. They were 15 yards away. If he waited any longer, they may smell him and bolt. The three deer took turns drinking from the stream. He had to make his decision. Kill the mother? She would bring more meat. Or kill one of the children. Leaving the mother alive would give her the chance to breed more. All three deer were turned slightly away. A proper shot behind the foreleg joint should pierce the heart. But which one? Suddenly, all the deer stopped and raised their heads, scanning. In that moment, he released his arrow. The shot flew true, striking the mother. The deer bleated once, its legs buckling as the body went into a state of shock and fear. The two fawns, confused and panicked, turned and ran back the way they came, abandoning their mother as she died. Jonathan quickly knocked another arrow and waited. Oftentimes, a dying animal had one last surge left in them. He held the bowstring drawn, the arrow ready. His hand burned in agony. Seconds passed, with no movement. Satisfied, Jonathan released the bow's tension, returned the arrow to his quiver, and stowed the bow on his back's maglock. Above, thunder rumbled. Lightning flashed angry, dark purple streaks, lighting up the canopy above. No time. Pulling his belt knife, he readied himself to field dress the animal. Jonathan gave a quick glance around to make sure he was alone, then sliced into the soft underbelly, cutting her open from her crotch to her sternum. Cutting through the breastbone, he opened the doe up and began removing her organs. Finishing the dressing, Jonathan wiped the sweat from his brow, smearing a little of the animal's blood on his cheek and forehead. Now, he just had to get the spanner to help him drag the carcass back to the grove, where he'd left Blossom hitched. Sudden motion from up the hill caught his attention. With it, the smell of rotting meat. The two fawns were bounding back the trail towards him, fear in their glassy black eyes. A streak of dark blue and gray flashed as a humanoid creature burst through the underbrush. Rushing on all fours, the creature tackled one of the fawns. In a swift motion, the figure jerked the fawn's head to the side, snapping its neck. The creature screeched in triumph. "Oh, God," Jonathan mouthed. Another roar, and a second gray-blue streak exploded from the dense forest. Leaping through the air, the monstrosity landed atop the second fawn, bringing the broken branch it held in its hand down like a club over the fawn's head. The deer, dazed, fell to the forest floor. The creature fell on the fawn and bit into its neck with its broken human teeth. The dying fawn bleated in terror, struggling to survive. It didn't know its end was seconds away. With each wail from the deer, the creature bit deeper. Both of the dead men gulped down blood and meat with rapture.
"Food!"
the creature screamed. The draugr violently tore into the fawns. Their grotesque, twisted bodies reeked of death, and their clothing was little more than rags. They were not freshly risen, and had grown in strength and ferocity. One of the dead looked up, blood and hair hanging from its mouth, as bloody spit dripped from its lips. It looked at Jonathan with milky white eyes.
"More food,"
the creature said, with a slight upturn to its dead lips.
"More food,"
the other agreed, dropping its kill. Jonathan's stomach dropped. He had stood there like a fool, frozen in fear. He'd seen draugr before, but never this close. His feet turned to run, then his conscious mind stopped his body's flight. The deer, the food. Without it, his mother had little chance of surviving. The dead men began advancing slowly, each picking up a thick, broken branch as a club. The stream. Grabbing the forelegs of the dead doe, Jonathan dug his heels into the damp, muddy earth, pulling the deer with him through the stream at his back. The draugr roared in bestial fury and ran for him. Pure, cold adrenaline and fiery fear drove Jonathan. He pulled and pulled, crossing the narrow stream with his kill, mere inches before the dead men were on him.
"No! Get you! Kill you! Eat you!"
"Not today," Jonathan huffed.
He never knew why, but the draugr either could not or would not cross running water. It was why his father insisted on installing the underground cistern around the farm. The storm above let loose an incredible boom of thunder.
"Found you, Jonathan,"
he heard the voice say. Jonathan clamped his hands to his ears, trying to block the voice out of his head.
"Go away!
Eat you! Eat you soon!"
the draugr said together, over and over.
"Shut up! Shut up! Shut up!
With sheer frustration, Jonathan pulled the deer 20 feet or so up the hill, trying to think of his next move. The draugr did not give him the opportunity. Dropping their clubs, the dead began picking up nearby rocks and throwing them with incredible force. Jonathan rolled away as a rock slammed into the tree to his right. A second rock clipped his thigh, knocking his leg out from under him. Grunting in pain, Jonathan scurried on all fours, working his way up the hill, taking cover behind a large oak.
"Come out! Come out!"
one of the undead croaked.
"Join us! Join us!"
the other said. His back to a tree, Jonathan knocked an arrow, taking deep, calming breaths. He had to make them count. He had 4 arrows. There were 2 of them. Head. He had to hit their heads. Nothing else would do. "I could run," he thought. "Leave the deer and run. Hunt again another day. But, Mom." Jonathan pivoted around the tree, drawing back the bow as he did. Sighting the closer of the two, he lined his sight and fired. The arrow whistled past the draugr's head, missing him.
"Damn it."
Jonathan pulled his head back behind the tree, just as one of the draugr hurled a heavy rock at his skull. Rocks began to slam into the tree to his back. Over and over, hard, crashing thumps impacted against the tree. Each time the stone hit wood, he closed his eyes tighter. Each hit made him lower his head further. And for a flickering second, he wished he were already dead. A moment passed, and the thumping stopped. Knocking another arrow, Jonathan forced his eyes open. He forced himself to peek around the tree. The draugr were lifting a fallen tree and were trying to slide it into the small creek. With a splash, they dropped the log, then went to retrieve another. Why? Draugr don't cross bridges. Oh. Oh no. Not a bridge. A dam. They were constructing a dam. If they succeeded, they'd cross and kill him. No. No, they won't, he told himself. Just get to the gear. Move. Jonathan took 3 deep breaths, stood, and ran back down the hill, away from the draugr. When he was 40 yards away, the creatures turned and roared. Dropping the log with a heavy crash, the undead monsters tore off, giving chase. With their supernatural speed, they would be on him in seconds. Jonathan reached the spot where he left his gear. Pulling away the log and leaves, he opened his pack and pulled out a 12-inch cylindrical tube. With a flick of his wrist, the tube extended to nearly double in length. He fished out a small Geist capsule and screwed it into the base of the tube. Flicking the safety off, the blitz stick hummed with power as the tip glowed a bright blue-white. With the draugr closing in, he slammed his feet into the spanner's leg harnesses. It took his shaking hands 3 tries to connect the power cords to the Geist power supply and flow regulator. The draugr tore up ground, bounding on all fours like angry gorillas. He activated the spanner's power, and the Geist flow hummed to life. The lead draugr leaped as they drew closer. Jonathan dialed the Geist flow to high, pushing himself backward and jumping clear before the monsters reached him. The spanner absorbed his landing with an electromagnetic cushion as he awkwardly held the blitz stick in his left hand. The second draugr lunged for him, swiping a clawed hand. Jonathan pushed to one side, dodging the attack, then lashed out with the blitz stick. The tip of the weapon connected with the dead man's right forearm. In a blast of bright light, the monster's arm blew apart, just below the elbow. The draugr registered no pain and swiped with his other arm in response. The dead man's hardened nails tore through the front of Jonathan's leather coat, ripping his shirt, drawing blood, and knocking the blitz stick from his hand. Jonathan pushed off hard with the spanners, bounding up the hill once more. As the draugr followed up the hill, Jonathan suddenly reversed course, the way he did when he played tag with his sister in the forest. Turning downhill, He sped past them, back to the bottom of the creek bed. The living dead, full of hate and hunger, followed. Jonathan pulled his bow from his back and knocked an arrow and took aim. The creatures came at him with murder in their dead eyes. Jonathan released the arrow. Once again, he missed, the arrow sailing wide. His heart ready to break, Jonathan knocked his second-to-last arrow. The Draugr were all but on top of him. He could smell the rotting stink of their dead bodies, mixed with the coppery blood of the deer. He drew back the bow and fired. As if guided by God, the missile struck the one-armed Draugr just above its left eye. The monster's head snapped back and fell to the ground, unmoving. But the second Draugr kept coming. The dead man barreled into Jonathan, knocking him to the ground, sending his bow flying into the forest.
"Eat! Eat you now!"
the creature growled from atop him. Jonathan twisted and struggled, but the dead man's grip was like iron. The monster's tongue lolled out like a dog, dripping drool on Jonathan's face. Leaning its head back slowly, the creature snapped forward, biting down towards Jonathan's face. Panic and fear fueled the young man's muscles. He pulled away hard, rolling his right shoulder and freeing his hand. The Draugr missed the young man's face, instead biting down hard onto Jonathan's right shoulder, its yellowed teeth tearing through the leather coat.
"Ah!"
Jonathan cried out. "Stop! Stop! Stop!" Suddenly, and without explanation, the Draugr obeyed. Both the living and the dead stared at each other in a split second of confusion. Jonathan took the moment to roll away, breaking the creature's grip. Getting his feet under him, he powered on the spanner. The Geist-powered rig propelled him forward, leaping through the forest. The undead shook off the momentary daze and scrambled after him. Jonathan ran, looking for the blitz stick. The glowing white tip stood out against the forest shadows. From behind, the Draugr closed, leaping high into the air. Jonathan dropped to his knees, slid across the dirt and rock, and grabbed the blitz stick. Turning, he thrust the weapon into the monster's maw. The Geist-powered weapon discharged its remaining charge with tremendous force, fracturing the monster's skull and killing it. The corpse fell atop Jonathan, but he only laughed and wept, for he heard the voice again.
"Still hungry. Always hungry."
3. "Sorry, girl," Jonathan said to his horse. "Didn't mean to be gone so long." The chestnut mare flared her nostrils. "Yeah, I'll get cleaned up when we get back to the farm." Jonathan finished tying the bundle containing the semi-butchered deer across the front of Blossom's saddle. It was an extra 100 pounds or so of weight, but Blossom could manage it. Securing his gear and his pack, Jonathan put his foot into the stirrup and swung his leg over. "Let's go home, girl." Once Jonathan cleared the forested region and began his trek across the grassy rolling hills near his home, the wind began to howl. Thunder boomed overhead. The voices of the dead screamed for the world to hear. Looking up, Jonathan saw the storm front moving in fast. The purple-black thunderhead clouds rolled in low. Long, flowing tendrils of clouds dangled, searching for the living. Tendrils of psychokinetic energy made manifest, an angry extension of the spirit storm's will and never-ending hunger.
"Yah, girl!"
Jonathan called out, kicking the mare in the flanks. Blossom took off, galloping across the open land.
"Jonathan, come to us. Feed us."
Jonathan did not want to look back. The faithful animal, sensing his dread, galloped harder and faster. Despite the waning autumn cold, both Blossom and Jonathan sweated from exertion and fear. Blossom chewed up the rough terrain as the cloudy tendrils of the storm reached lazily downward. Drifting on wind like the tentacles of a jellyfish, the storm wanted the flesh and blood of any living thing to feed it.
"Go!"
he screamed into the horse's ear. Blossom's neck was extended, her tail straight. Jonathan was low in the saddle, his neck next to hers.
"We can do this, girl,"
he said over the rush of wind. But even with their best efforts, the storm was gaining on them. If Jonathan pushed the horse any harder, the animal would die. The deer carcass was weighing them down. The meat that might keep them alive was also the one thing that might kill him.
"Damn it!" Jonathan roared.
He loosened the straps holding the deer. Bouncing on the back of a horse made it difficult, but he worked as fast as he could, his hands clumsily untying the abrasive rope's knots. He felt the temptation to look up, but he didn't need to see death to know it was there. A brain-searing screech of thousands and thousands of angry ghosts split the sky. Like a wailing thunderclap, the roar could be heard across the valley.
"Feed! Feed!"
In a fit of fear and frustration, Jonathan pulled his belt knife and just cut the damn ropes and let the deer carcass fall away. And with it, any hope for his mother. In saving himself, he doomed her. Blossom picked up speed, and the two of them ran as fast as they could. Fear and the need to survive pushed them. Blossom crested the ridgeline. Below, down the hill in the valley, he saw his home, less than a mile away. The screams from the storm were heard in the sky, heard in his head. They hated, and they hungered. He felt his sanity on the edge, ready to crack. Suddenly, Jonathan heard a sharp snap. Blossom tumbled down hard, taking Jonathan with her. The animal screamed and whinnied in pain, while Jonathan screamed in surprise and anger. Tumbling over and over down the hill, his pack was ripped loose, the pieces of his spanner thrown across the grassy hill. When he finally stopped, he was flat on his back. His body ached and screamed in pain. His sprained wrist refused to move. His fingers were unresponsive. But he had to get up. Foggy and dazed, he stood on shaky legs, then steadied himself as his head spun. Waves of nausea washed over him, and he fought the urge to vomit. Blinking his eyes open, he heard Blossom. She was in pain. The horse was 10 yards away, up the valley hill. He could see the animal's large, beautiful, wet eye. She was scared. Her leg had snapped. He could see the broken bone. And there was nothing he could do. A quick glance up, and Jonathan saw the spirit storm cresting the ridgeline. Like a great demonic hand, the tendrils draped down slowly, feeding off the animal's fear and suffering. He looked back at the horse.
"I'm sorry, girl. I'm so sorry," Jonathan sobbed as he turned his back on her, running towards the house. He heard her cry out as she died.
His tears fell. The ghostly storm tore away the living flesh of the animal, flaying her alive. Blossom's screams of fear and abandonment echoed across the valley.
"Still hungry, Jonathan. Still hungry."
The spirit storm continued its blind search for the living. Jonathan ran across the boundary of the farm's property and straight to the main power box. He grabbed the power levers and pulled all three down. The farm's engines sparked to life. The aquifers began pumping the underground water through the buried pipes. The Geist collection turbines around the farm slowly began to rotate, sapping the storm's power for collection. The blitz field crackled on. A dome of energy snapped and popped in place. Jonathan dropped to his knees. The storm slammed against the electrical field. Over and over, wave after wave of psychokinetic energy tried to penetrate the shield to feed on him. Jonathan chanced to look at the storm. Within the swirling purple and black mass of thunderous power, he could make out images of people, spectral forms of the dead, who hated the living.
Jonathan, we hear your dreams. Join us. Feed us.
The collected Geist would make for a good harvest. He could take the power cells to Rheinstadt and get food rations. If Mother could last that long. Jonathan stood and felt ashamed. When the storm abated the next morning, he would have to try and scavenge what he could. He opened the farm's cottage door and stepped in. The wooden floor creaked under his boots.
Jonathan?
A weak voice called out. I'm here, Mom, Jonathan said. Dropping his coat in a chair, he walked into the back room, holding his now broken wrist. On a small bed lay an emaciated woman. The room smelled of sickness and human waste. The frail woman coughed, and her eyes seemed to have trouble focusing. Jonathan knelt by the bed and took the woman's hand. Her skin felt papery thin and waxy.
I'm so sorry, Mom. I had a deer, but the storm came. On my way back, I lost the horse. I messed it all up.
The frail lady patted Jonathan's hand as she coughed.
It's okay, dear. I wasn't that hungry. We'll survive.
Seeing her, Jonathan knew she was lying. She'd die soon. She knew it, too. Even if he had food, she was sick. He had to decide. Tonight. If he let her die while she was asleep, she could rise as one of them. But he could show her the ultimate mercy. He could end her suffering now. Once he burned her body, then her vengeful spirit may find its way to another storm. And that was the world he lived in.
You go. Rest, dear,
his mother said weakly.
You look tired.
Jonathan nodded, saying nothing. Outside, the spirit storm continued battering the farm's defenses. The collectors would deplete most of the valuable Geist, but for now, all he could do was wait. Jonathan picked up the wood axe with his good hand on his way to the cottage's front room. He sat in his chair, exhausted. Holding the axe, he tested the edge with his thumb. It would do the job, if it came to that. But for just a moment, he had to close his eyes. Sleep washed over him. A shuffling along the wooden floor woke him. Jonathan's eyes snapped open. Hello?
Jonathan.
Mother?
He said, turning in his chair, feeling relieved. The silhouette of the skinny woman stood in the entryway to the cottage's front room. Jonathan could barely make out his mother standing there in the darkness.
Mother, you should be in bed.
I can't. I'm hungry, Jonathan. So hungry.